Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from a meteorologist from the National Weather Service in Boulder on what the weather for the coming days will mean for firefighting efforts. Then the Calwood Fire is now the largest by acreage in Boulder County history. It was so named as it started in the area of the Calwood Education Centre. Well, according to the centre's website, all staff were evacuated and are safe, and the buildings at the Education Centre, including the lodging cabins, aren't damaged. In fact, they're now being used to house firefighters in the area. And Rafael Salgado, who is the executive director, has permission to stay on site, and he's feeding and taking care of the firefighters. Well, even prior to the fire, the Education Centre, which has served more than 100,000 kids and family members for the past few years, has been suffering because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll hear from Rafael Salgado. He spoke with us a couple of weeks ago about the challenges that they were facing even prior to the fire, and about the important work that they do. Then October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We'll hear from the Safe House Progressive Alliance for Nonviolence on the work that they do, the impact of COVID-19 on domestic violence. And we'll hear from a survivor of domestic violence who now speaks out as an advocate. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, it's time for A Public Affair. And this morning, we'll hear Black Talk. It's a collaboration between KGNU and the NAACP of Boulder County. Today's show is called Joy and Pain, taking a look at the experience of African Americans in 2020. At 9 o'clock, it's media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out today's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Firefighters were able to limit the growth of the Calwood Fire in Boulder County yesterday, but at least 26 homes have been destroyed, and northwest parts of the county are still under mandatory or voluntary evacuation orders. Boulder County Sheriff Division Chief Mike Wagner said last evening at 7 p.m. that the fire was about 15% contained and had burned close to 8,800 acres. It is already the largest wildfire in Boulder County history. Wagner said last night that the northern edge of the Calwood Fire was an area they were paying close attention to.
At this point on the Calwood Fire, in my meeting with the incident commanders, kind of the most concerning area of the fire is that northern ridge, just because it's really difficult, really deep, really rocky, steep terrain, and there's just a lot of fuel availability in the area. One of the things is that the ridge along the South St. Vrain, as it aligns with the winds as they move through the canyon, that's also something that kind of has them concerned.
The wildfire was first reported at noon Saturday near the Calwood Education Center on County Road 87. As of last night, the cause of the fire and its point of origin had not been determined, but there were no lightning strikes in the area, so it was likely not started due to weather. Boulder City Manager Jane Brodigam declared a local disaster emergency and issued an order closing the Boulder Reservoir to the public while it serves as an operations center and campsite for firefighters for both fires in the county. Wagner said that of the 26 homes they know were destroyed, 19 were on Mountain Ridge Road near US 36 and Nelson Road, but they suspect more structures have been burned. He said that fire crews were able to prevent more loss yesterday through suppression efforts. A federal incident team will be taking over command of the fire this morning. In total, Boulder County officials said about 1,700 residences were within the mandatory evacuation area, including a population of about 3,000 people. An evacuation point has been set up at Boulder County's North Broadway complex at 3460 North Broadway, where evacuees can find information. Boulder Valley School District announced Sunday evening that the Gold Hill and Jamestown Elementary schools will be closed today as a result of the fires. Monday is a planned day off for St. Vrain Valley students. Many roads remain closed, and officials advised people to avoid the area to give room for first responders to work. The Left Hand Canyon fire, which sprang up yesterday, grew to more than 300 acres. The town of Ward was evacuated, as well as Sunshine Canyon and Gold Hill. Homes along Spring Gulch Road and on the 13,000 block of Left Hand Canyon were evacuated shortly after 1 p.m. when a neighbor called in the fire. Yesterday afternoon, aerial firefighters were able to stop the spread of the Left Hand Canyon fire. Jamestown, which was already under voluntary evacuation for the Calwood fire, is now also under voluntary evacuation for the Left Hand Canyon fire. County officials said that an error led to some alert systems telling residents of Boulder and Longmont to evacuate, even though Those areas were not in the evacuation area. For the Left Hand Canyon Fire, an evacuation point has been set up at the Nederland Community Center. Large animals can be taken to the Gilpin County Fairgrounds in Black Hawk. The Boulder County Emergency Operations Call Center opened at 8 a.m. this morning and will stay open until 9 p.m. tonight. The number to call to speak to a staff member is 303-413-7730. In other fire news, the Cameron Peak Fire west of Fort Collins is now the largest in Colorado's recorded history, topping 200,000 acres yesterday. The blaze is about 62% contained, and firefighters were helped by lower winds and higher humidity Saturday night. And in Grand County, the East Troublesome Fire grew to 11,562 acres with 5% containment yesterday morning. The wildfire was burning on Arapaho National Forest lands northwest of Hot Sulphur Springs and northeast of Kremlin. Today is the first day of in-person voting in Colorado for those who are not turning their ballots to a collection box or by mail. In Boulder County, officials will open vote centers today where people can register to vote, cast their ballot in person, or drop off their completed ballot. The Boulder County Clerk's Office told 9 News that they have not had any reports of voters needing replacement ballots due to the fires, but some of those who evacuated may not have been able to grab their ballots. While many residents have grabbed essentials, some may have forgotten them. Should a county resident need a replacement ballot, the county says they can get one starting today with its ballot-to-go service, which is available at some voter centers. In news about the coronavirus, the number of people currently hospitalized in the state is 348, and the state's seven-day moving average of positivity rates is well above 5%, according to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. The city of Denver issued 2 new orders Friday. Gatherings are now limited to 5 people, and mask wearing is required in all outdoor settings. Organized athletic programs like college and high school sports, as well as organized youth and adult leagues, are exempt from the expanded order. People who are by themselves are also exempt. The Colorado Sun reports that Denver's announcement comes as coronavirus cases and hospitalizations are rising in Denver and across Colorado. Health officials are sounding the alarm, saying that if the trajectory isn't altered, hospitals could eventually be overwhelmed. There is an air quality alert in effect today, and it's an action day in the 7-county Denver-Boulder metropolitan area. Residents are requested to limit driving of gas or diesel vehicles until at least 4 p.m. Today's forecast shows mostly sunny skies with highs in the low 70s. There will be widespread smoke, mainly after 3 p.m., continuing into tonight. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 73. And for KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 12 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, the weather is going to be crucial for fighting the fires. I spoke this morning with Evan Dorenzo, who's a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Boulder.
Yeah, we had a little bit of humidity relief yesterday, and then overnight humidities were back in the 30 to 40% range, but gusts remained pretty high to about 40 miles per hour overnight. Today will be warmer and drier, also it was a little bit colder last night, but today will be warmer. It'll be drier with humidities in the upper teens to 30% range. But there should be some less wind with gusts only 20 to 30 miles per hour, so that will be good. Except for in South Park, we have another red flag warning for humidities around 10% with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. So that's pretty much what the difference is today than yesterday.
For the fires here in Boulder County, if there are reduced winds, that seems to be good news, certainly for the aerial support. But what does it mean for the smoke? Because the smoke has just been all over Boulder County. We've had increasing numbers of days with just absolutely degraded air quality. Is there a sense of where the smoke might end up now if we're not seeing the winds?
No, we're expecting significant smoke from the fires. There's now, I think, 4 fires putting off plumes. Yeah, so with the 4 different plumes there in the mountains, north of Boulder County and west of Boulder County, and with the northwest transport flow aloft, smoke will probably continue to be a widespread impact.
And for the coming days, as they continue to battle the fires, not just the two here in Boulder County, but of course the Cameron Peak fire, now the state's largest ever fire, is there a sense of what the weather holds for the firefighting efforts?
So the next couple of days, it'll continue to be strong winds and low humidities, but by the to the later in the week, towards the weekend, there's a chance for some precipitation. So I guess the best that we could hope for is to get some decent precipitation over the fires, but we're going to keep monitoring the situation as it evolves.
That's meteorologist Evan Dorenzo. He's with the National Weather Service in Boulder. Well, the Calwood Fire, now the largest by acreage in Boulder County's history, is so named as it started in the vicinity of the Calwood Education Centre. Now, Calwood has provided life-changing experiences in the Colorado mountains, allowing 100,000 kids and their family members access to the outdoors. Well, in 2020, all school and summer programs were cancelled due to the coronavirus pandemic, and now they are dealing with the wildfire. Well, according to the centre's website, all staff were evacuated and are safe. The Calwood buildings, including the lodge and the cabins, are not damaged. Currently, Calwood is actually housing approximately 30 firefighters at their cabins. Rafael Salgado, who's the executive director, was given permission to stay on site. And according to the website, he's feeding and he's taking care of the firefighters. Well, as we said, even prior to the fire, Calwood was dealing with the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the education centre. Rafael Salgado spoke with KGNU's Rosanna Longo a couple of weeks ago about the challenges that they were already facing.
We had to cancel the school programs, summer camps, all the retreats. You know, we lost 10 employees of the 22 that we had, and the revenue was reduced only to 30%. In the summer, we opened Calwood, the whole property, 200 acres, to families that want to come up by camp. And I have a very cool experience because this is a very secluded place where they can camp safely with a lot of social distancing acres in between the campsites. So the families were able to respond, and they gave us donations. And we did a couple day camp. We also helped some, you know, we did some Latino family programs in a different way here at Calwood. And now we're launching this family program for the schools. But, you know, after all this, we feel like it's not going to be enough. And that's why we as an organization are launching a fundraising campaign in that we just hope that the community can, you know, we never have asked the community in the past to support us as an organization. As, you know, for the last 30 years that we have served so many kids, many of them, obviously, they're adults. Now, we're asking the community to help us raise $250,000 so that we can make it to May and keep providing these programs to the families. It's not a lot of money from our budget, because our budget was $1.8 million, but it's going to be enough to keep us open. We just hope that the community can respond, because we don't know what else to go to, you know, to help us stay open and keep providing these amazing opportunities for everybody.
That's Rafael Salgado, who is the executive director of the Calwood Education Centre. It is 8:17. You're listening to KGNU. Well, lots of people want to help those who are impacted by the fires. And yesterday, Mike Wagner with the Boulder County Sheriff's Office asked for people not to show up at the evacuation centres with donations or offers to help. But he said that there certainly are lots of ways that people can help those impacted by the fires.
We've received lots of questions around community donations, and our community is very generous and everyone wants to help out, and we're so grateful for that. The easiest way to donate and try to help is to go to BoulderOEM.com. There's a button now for donations, and if you click that, that will help get you into the process, and so the donation management folks at our Emergency Operations Center can facilitate those donations. We just ask that you please don't show up. It overwhelms resources and it draws away from the incident management portion in order to do those. So we're very grateful for the help, very grateful for the assistance. We just ask that you go to BoulderOEM.com, donate through the link button, or donate or communicate the donation through the link button so that we can facilitate the proper receipt of that. Thank you.
That is Mike Wagner with the Boulder County Sheriff's Department. Once again, that website is boulderoem.com. That's also where updates are coming through about the fires. And we'll have news continuing throughout the day here at KGNU, particularly if there are any changes right now with evacuations. Do stay tuned to kgnu.org and also go to boulderoem.com. It is 8:19. Well, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and for more than, since 1979, the Safe House Progressive Alliance for Nonviolence, or SPAN, has been supporting hundreds of thousands of survivors of domestic violence. I spoke with Anne Tapp, who is the executive director of SPAN, as well as with a survivor of domestic violence, herself a former SPAN client, Danielle Holmes. Danielle will be one of the keynote speakers at a fundraiser that's happening this coming Thursday for SPAN. Anne says that there are increasing calls for supports for domestic violence victims during the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, we had a little bit of humidity.
Domestic violence is really, it's kind of fueled by isolation, alienating a survivor from support networks and support systems. We can crazy making behavior that often makes survivors feel like the abuse either isn't as bad as it truly is, or that it's somehow their fault. And sort of the mixture of a lot of those core strategies that abusers use to keep survivors connected to them have just been magnified by the pandemic. So early on, we heard from a number of survivors, just, the irony of kind of sheltering at home, but it's not really sheltering if you're living in the same space as the person who's terrifying you and abusing you. So for a lot of survivors, they didn't have just the social connections that they normally would have. They didn't have coworkers asking how they're doing. They didn't have family members that pop in on them. They didn't even have neighbors that dropped in to visit. So they were further isolated and really kind of imprisoned in their own homes with their abusive partners.
I think that's such an important point to make, that the eyes of the community were essentially gone from folks who were living through this. And I know kids who weren't at school, you don't have the teachers or other folks in the school really noticing what's going on. You don't have other members of the community. And that sense of isolation, Danielle, maybe you could share a bit of your own experience, because you've lived through this, you've survived, you've been a client of SPAN. You know what? Describe a little bit about how isolating an experience this can be, domestic violence.
Absolutely. Depending on the situation, it can be very controlling. There's a lot of different methods one can use on a person to control them. I know specifically when I first reached out for help from a domestic violence agency, I didn't even have shoes on my feet. I was being held captive by preventing me from having items like keys and phones and shoes. So being, in a house where there is no escape, where there isn't that moment to go to work or go to school and just break away, it's definitely festering more. And I think it's so important that, 9,000 people reached out, but there's probably 9,000 more that are afraid to. And I think that deserves recognition as well.
Maybe we could talk a little bit more about that. The fact that the numbers that we have are shocking enough, but that's really the tip of the iceberg because of everything that you've said, that it is so isolating, that you're cut off from family, friends, and the community. And then I maybe talk a little bit about the psychological impact of that, that how that could maybe prevent you from reaching out and asking for help as well.
Absolutely. The tactics for abuse vary. And some issues that come to mind that are rarely spoken about are the use of drugs to control a partner. I know it's discussed in the sex trade, but rarely in a domestic violence setting. And that's definitely a tool to control and abuse a person, is getting them hooked or dependent on drugs, which is usually an escape from their situation.
For people listening who maybe have never experienced this and wonder why don't people leave as soon as the first incident happens or the second incident happens, could you just explain a little bit about the pattern of abuse? You touched on it there, but why it is so difficult for people to leave these situations and to go and seek out help?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in a domestic violence situation. I came into adulthood, you know, disenfranchised, found myself in another abusive relationship, just repeating the past. I think that especially when you're exposed to that as a child, the normalcy is kind of erased and you kind of get sucked in to, like, I should accept this is because this is how it is supposed to be. This is how I've seen it happen, you know, before with my mom. And for a long time as a child going through that, I could not understand why my mom did not leave. I could not understand it until I went through it. And after going through it, I have come to realize that it's not as cut as dry. Like, yes, everybody knows, including the person, this is not healthy. But it's not that easy to just pack up and erase a whole life. Like, you need support. Like, when I came to Span, I needed shelter. I needed everything. I needed toiletries. I needed bedding. I needed just a place to grab my head and get it right. There's so many facets, like, especially when you mix substance abuse into it, like, you're really having to change people, places, and things. That's more than just one person can even fathom to try to accomplish. It really takes a community to help a person to see them through and out safely to the other side.
Well, Danielle, tell us a little bit more about your journey, that you're now in a position that you are working as an advocate, that you're speaking out to support other survivors and people maybe going through the situation right now, and working, you know, to have your voice heard as somebody who's gone through this. How did you get from there, from not having shoes, from needing the most basic supplies when you went to Span, to now being in the position you're in?
I accredit it to my community and also to my education. Along my way, I stumbled into a community college and really found my purpose. I found a place where I was free and my voice was valid and heard and actually celebrated. I've had so many opportunities to advocate for my community in such ways as interning for the R Center for a year. I've also been student body president at MSU Denver. So I've had this amazing opportunity through school and community to find my voice and then make it a vehicle for others, because I know others feel this way and fear prevents them from speaking.
What would you say, Danielle, are the biggest misconceptions that people have, society has as well, and about domestic violence that you either hear when you're speaking or, you know, that you're trying to counter with your advocacy?
Absolutely. I think first and foremost is, why don't you just leave? And it is definitely not that simple. Like I said, you have to erase an entire life. You have to search out new people, new places, and new things. And financially, maybe some people are able to do that, but others are not. And people that come from this as a child and then into adulthood are severely disadvantaged. I myself suffer PTSD. I circled and fought around for years just trying to grasp emotionally, where do I belong? Where do I need to be? I could not figure that out until I found school and found my purpose. I think that people really just feel like they're accepting the situation, and it just is not that. People really need to know how they can get through this monumental situation. Like I said, it takes a village. I needed so many things and could not even think past day one. When you are in survival mode, a month from now doesn't even register. You need to figure out, what am I going to eat at noon? Okay, how am I going to get gas to get to work so I can make $7.25 an hour to feed my daughter? You know, when you're in survival mode and you're just like, please don't drink tonight so I don't get beat, so I can have my sleep and be prepared to survive another day, you cannot think past that moment.
With the statistics that we know about domestic violence, chances are there are several people listening to this radio broadcast who are maybe in a situation that you once were in or something similar. So what would you like to say to somebody who maybe feels like you did at one point, hopeless, trapped, and just stuck in a situation of violence?
I want to say that there is a whole community out here to help you and support you. You are not alone, and you don't have to do this alone. Contact Expan. They have a shelter. They will even foster your pets. That was a key thing for me, is my Fifi is my emotional support animal. So they have even thought that through. There is definitely help out here. Don't be ashamed. Don't feel like you're not worth it, because you so are. And so is your family. Like, everybody deserves to have you and see the best you. And it's time for you to take that off your plate and let the community embrace you and take you where you need to go.
That's Danielle Holmes, a former client of SPAN, and now she herself is an advocate for survivors of domestic violence. She's going to be giving a keynote speech at SPAN's virtual gala fundraiser, which is happening this coming Thursday evening. We also heard from SPAN's executive director, Anne Tapp. Now, you can find out more about the work of SPAN, the resources that can be accessed, but also how you can support them and their upcoming virtual gala fundraiser at the website safehousealliance.org, safehousealliance.org.